J.D. Schwartz brings extensive public relations experience and the professional zeal of an aggressive New Yorker to his approach of doing publicity. His eclectic roster of clients includes Scott Bakula, Rocky Carroll, Cheryl Ladd, Mary Murphy, Jacqueline Smith, Louis Van Amstel, and Mary Wilson, among others. Best known for his personality representation, Schwartz achieved initial success in the field of theater. In his first position in PR at Solter's Roskin Friedman in New York, he worked on the Broadway hits Nicholas Nickleby, 42nd Street, and Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music. After a brief stint with Burnham Callahan and Associates, working on accounts such as Patti LaBelle, Al Green, and Elliot Gould, Schwartz worked on Night Mother, Hurley Burley, both New York and Los Angeles productions, and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom with Broadway producers Fred Zollo and Barbara Ligeti. In 1985, Jay moved from New York to Los Angeles and joined Nancy Ryder Public Relations, which evolved into Baker Winokur Ryder Public Relations, BWR. Jay opened his own PR firm, JDS, in 1995. Over the years, Jay has worked with such diverse clientele as Christopher Walken, Drew Barrymore, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Lauren Bacall, Danny Aiello, Anita Baker, Gladys Knight, Luke Robitaille, Sugar Ray Leonard, and many others. Jay has always approached publicity with a personal touch, merging a roll-up-your-sleeves work ethic with an emphasis on building and maintaining relationships at both the personal and professional level. Jay has been working with Scott Bakula since before he played Sam Beckett. Albie was lucky enough to talk to him about his life, career, and Quantum Leap.
Mr. J.D. Schwartz, thank you so much for joining me today on the Quantum Leap podcast.
My pleasure. I was looking forward to this.
Me too. This was originally our producer's idea. He saw you at one of the Quantum Leap conventions, and he said you had a lot of good insight on what happened in Quantum Leap.
Yeah, well, I've represented Scott since 1986, so before Quantum.
When did you first get into the business of being a personal representative? Is that the right title?
I'm a personal publicist, and I've been a personal publicist. I did publicity in New York before I moved here. I moved here in 1985, and that's the business I got into because I was doing publicity in New York. I got a job doing publicity here, and so let's just say 1985.
You were doing publicity for the theater?
Yes, I did a lot of theater publicity. I worked in New York. I worked on the original shows, 42nd Street.
Oh, wow.
And Nicholas Nickleby and Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music, and Hurley Burley, which eventually came to L.A., and I was a producer on that show in L.A.
Is that something you always wanted to do, or how did that come about?
Well, I originally was going to be an actor. That's what I studied in school. Originally, I was going to be a Spanish major because I wanted to be a Spanish teacher because I speak fluent Cuban Spanish because I lived in Miami for a few years when I was a kid, and all my friends were Juban, which are Cuban Jews, and we just spoke Spanish. I learned it. So when I went to college, I figured, oh, I'll be a Spanish teacher. I like being with kids and et cetera. But I wasn't so interested after I started in the linguistics and the history of the language. I was more interested in, I always wanted to be that little kid on that television commercial. So I got into acting. And when I switched majors, my grades just went from C's and D's to A's. So that's really how it all started.
Did you do much acting?
Not much. I just, in school. I didn't do anything out of school. I mean, I did an episode of Enterprise, but I was, an extra.
Oh, really? I'm going to have to, when I rewatch it, I just watched it because they all came out on Blu-ray, but I didn't know you were in there. So I did recognize you the other night on television. I saw you on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes, I was on Dancing with the Stars the other night. I haven't seen it yet. I have it TiVo'd to watch, but during the show and after the show, I got quite a lot of emails and tweets and messages that oh, we just said you're sitting next to my sister and nephew emailed me to say you're sitting next to or you're with Carrie Heffernan, and I didn't know who that was. So I turned to Leah Remini. I was there with Gladys Knight,
mm-hmm.
and I was sitting next to Leah, and that's the first time I met her, and I showed her the text that I had just gotten from my sister, And I go, is that you? And she said, yeah. I said, well, my sister's a fan. She said, well, let's take a selfie.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I texted a picture. But, yeah, it turns out everyone's been telling me I was all over Dancing with the Stars the other night.
Oh, yeah, they kept cutting to you all the time. I was sitting with Heather. I'm like, that's J.D. Schwartz. I'm talking to him in a few days, and he's right on Dancing with the Stars. Do you like Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, well, I have a clients who've done the show and who will be back on the show in the spring. I represent Louis Van Amstel, who was one of the dancers. He hasn't been on for a few seasons, but I think he's going to be back in the spring. And I represent Gladys, who did the show, and I used to represent Carrie Ann Inaba, and I'm very good friends with Dimitri Chaplin and Chelsea Hightower and Karina, and I know all of them there. I've been involved in that show since season two, and I'm also involved in So You Think You Can Dance, because I represent Mary Murphy, who's the judge on that show.
Oh, wow. Very exciting for me, because Dancing with Stars is like my sporting event, because I'm not like a sports guy. So I really enjoy the dancing shows.
Yeah. So I've been involved with these shows for a long time.
Who did you want to win?
Alfonso.
Yeah, I thought he was the best dancer.
I do, too.
But I liked them all, so I was very torn.
His freestyle was just phenomenal.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was like going to see a Broadway show, I'd say, almost.
Like, Alfonso was the tap dance kid when he was a kid, which was a Broadway show, which I saw Alfonso in the tap dance kid when he was a kid.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I first saw him in that Pepsi commercial with Michael Jackson.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, I've been a fan of him growing up because we're roughly the same age.
Uh-huh.
So that was just very nice to see you, and it's cool that you're into that and I'm into that.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah.
You must get to go to a lot of really cool functions, being friends and working for all these famous people.
I go to a lot, but honestly, when I go, it's work. Like, the other night wasn't work. The other night was fun. Gladys called me that morning and said, can we go to, can you get tickets to go to the finale? And she flew in because she lives in Vegas. And I said, sure. So she came in with her daughter, who is also a friend of mine, who was sitting on the other side of me. And we went. We picked her up at the airport. We went to get a bite to eat. And then we went. And so that was fun because it wasn't work. Normally, when I go to, events or award shows, I'm working. So it's not so much fun, because it's work. So I'd rather stay home and watch the show on television, and make fun of people. But that's what Leah and I were doing the other night. We sat there together making fun of people. It was really a lot of fun. Mm.
I love her. Her personality, I've loved her ever since King of Queens.
Mm-hmm.
For our listeners that don't know what your job entails, I don't think a lot of casual television viewers, movie viewers, actually know how many people it takes to make a show and how many different jobs there are in the business of entertainment that has to happen for the TV show or movie to come to us. Can you explain what you do?
I'm a publicist. So anytime, and we'll use Scott as an example, anytime you see Scott on a television show or an article in a magazine or when he was on the cover of TV Guide this year, I did that. I negotiated the cover. I negotiated what photo we were going to use and made sure we had a cover before the show came on the air. And the magazine was actually on stands for 2 weeks. So that was a pretty big deal. But what a publicist does is tries to create a positive image for the public and for the industry. You want to have a great image for the industry because you want them to hire you for the next job and the next job and the next job. And you want to have a great image for the public because you want them to tune in or go to the movies or buy a ticket to a Broadway show. So you want to keep doing more and more and more. That's, what you try to do is positive for each client. So that's basically what I do. But publicity, there's a whole lot more to it. There's a whole protection factor. There's, choosing to do the right thing. It's choosing to do quality over quantity, not, just because it's publicity and they want you to do, let's go do a talk show may not be the right thing to do now. Or, we want you to do this, or the network or the studio wants you to do this magazine. And it's like, well, that really doesn't fit in with what we're doing. So for me, personal publicity, and I think anything in the entertainment business, The entertainment business is about relationships, and I think that is what it is in all businesses, but I think a little bit more so in the entertainment business, because it's not about what you know to begin with. It's about who you know, who's going to get you on the show, or who you have a relationship with at a talk show, or who, what producer you know to get you the next job. Or it's more about who you know. Once you're in that door, or once you get it, it's about what you know, how you're going to conduct yourself when you do an interview, how you're going to do your audition. So it's really, for me, when I say personal publicity, it really is personal, because it's about who you are, and everybody, no two people are the same. So what's right for Scott may not be right for Gladys, if that makes sense.
Yeah, job well done for Scott Bakula, because his public image is amazing.
Thank you. Well, Scott's easy, because Scott really is a good guy. He must be one of the nicest guys in this business. And I'm lucky, because I've worked with Scott since June of 1986.
Everyone I've talked to for the show that's worked with Scott says the exact same thing, that he's like the best guy in the world, that what you see is really him. So,
and Scott is one of my closest friends. Always been there for me. I've always been there for him. We're closer than anybody, I think. And like I said, I've known him. I've worked with him since June of 86. I met Scott in New York. He was doing a off-Broadway show called Three Guys Naked from the Waist Down. It was about stand-up comedians. And I threw the opening night party for that show at a club called Limelight, which was an old church on 6th Avenue. And up in the VIP room, after I had watched the show, you know, then we came to the party. And when I met Scott, I walked up to him and I said, one day you and I are going to work together. And then, you know, I moved to L.A. and he moved to L.A. and he was doing a show here called Nightclub Confidential. And I was hired to do the publicity for that show because they were looking. You know, I was a New Yorker, so I had a very aggressive attitude, and I had Broadway experience. They hired me, I met Scott, and like I said, it's been ever since, June 1986, and Scott left that show because he got his first sitcom, his first job. Not his first acting job, but his first series regular, and it was a show called Gung Ho.
Oh, Gung Ho, yes, yes.
It was a, you know, a remake of the movie that Ron Howard had done. And then after Gung Ho, he did Eisenhower and Lutz. And then after that ended, he got the pilot for Quantum Leap. He did that. And then after he shot the pilot, he went to New York to star on Broadway in Romance, Romance. This was 1988, and when he was nominated for a Tony Award. So Scott and I have been together for a really long time.
Can you just share your story with us about your journey with Scott on Quantum Leap?
Quantum Leap was the best. It's my favorite experience. His too, of all the jobs and all the stuff we've done. Quantum Leap was just a wonderful show. I would call him every Wednesday night at 11 o'clock because the show was on at 10. I would call him after every episode because there was something about every single episode of that show that just touched you. Because each week, the show, it was different. It was like a whole brand new thing. New characters, new people, new everything. But there was always, that show had heart to it. So I remember when there were days where I was having a hard time, you know, at work or a tough day, I'd just drive over to Universal and go on the set and just hang out on the set. Because it was just fun and easy and nice, and the people were nice. It was just a wonderful set, wonderful people, all the way from top to bottom, Don Belisario on down. Don's executive assistant, Harriet Margulies, she worked with Don on JAG and then when he created NCIS. And Harriet handles all of the fan mail stuff for NCIS. She has for years. And actually, one of the producers on NCIS, not Scott's show, not NCIS New Orleans, but NCIS, is Charles Johnson, who was a producer on Quantum Leap. So it's all sort of been like a family, but Quantum Leap was just wonderful. You know, I can watch any one of those episodes. You know, I can tell you about almost any one of those episodes. I think there was one episode that I wasn't thrilled with. I don't remember which one it was now.
Do you remember what it was about?
I don't. I think it was written by Paul something. His sister was a VJ on MTV.
Brown?
He wrote the Chippendales episode.
Uh-huh.
But that wasn't the episode. It was another episode that he wrote that I, it was the only episode that I think I wasn't, you know, I didn't particularly like.
It's very hard to think of a bad episode of Quantum Leap.
I know. I can tell the ones I love. I love Jimmy. I love the Driving Miss Daisy episode. I love Shock Theater.
Mm.
One of my favorite episodes. That show was just the best. Everything about that show was just wonderful. It really was. From the people on down. And every time you went on set, you had that feeling.
From what I've heard from other people, it really had a lot to do with Scott and him having a great attitude about the whole thing and it kind of trickling down to everybody else.
Yeah, that's very true. Scott's a really good guy. You know, I'm not saying that because he's my friend. I'm just saying Scott is a really, really good human being. Scott and I have been through, you know, as I said, a lot together, and he's just awesome. He's just absolutely awesome. Here they are. Let's see. Let me pull out all these DVDs. I can tell you a funny story about these DVDs.
All right.
On the back of the box of all the DVDs are photos from the episodes. And they had called me about, you know, about photos. And I used to take photos, not take pictures, but I would get the photos from NBC because I had photo approval for Scott. And they were just using generic photos. And I had said to them, well, why don't you use photos from every episode that's in that DVD set, like from season two, season three, whatever the episodes are, why don't you use photos from them? And they said, well, we don't have them. You know, we can't find the pictures. Nobody has them. I said, well, I have them. And they said, well, you give them to us. And I said, well, you can buy them from me. We can't do that. And I said, okay, I'll give you the photos. You have to retouch them and, you know, let me have photo approval. But I have to get the credit on the DVD box, photos courtesy of me. And they said, yes. Now, I did that on purpose because by doing that, that will show everybody, because it's released by Universal, that I own the photos, which I, you know, I didn't take the photos, but because I'm the keeper of the photos, they're now my photos. And if you look on the back of the boxes, I'm looking at them right now, you'll see photos courtesy of J.D. Schwartz.
That's awesome.
But I also made sure on every single box, the photos that they used, there was a photo from every episode so that it wasn't just generic and the fans could have something cool.
It's very nice artwork.
So, but here's a favorite one from season one where he played the mafioso guy in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah. Double Identity, I think.
Oh, yes. There's a funny story there. That's the first episode that they shot, you know, when the show was picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember driving out to the set that day, and Scott was, there's a scene in the backyard where he has to sing Volare.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean is giving him the words. Well, a few years later, he's on the set of Enterprise, and he's in the spacesuit. So he's, like, in that, if you watched Enterprise, you'll know what I'm talking about. And as I was walking to the stage, that memory came back in my head of the day that I drove out to in Pasadena in the backyard when he was singing Volare. And I just started thinking about it. So when I saw him on set, I said to him, hey, remember, you know, when we shot this and we were, and you were singing Volare, oh, Cantare, oh. He goes, yeah. And I got, you know, I was just thinking about that. And then they called him to set and he walked away. And the next thing I hear is, JD, I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, what? He goes, now you got that song in my head. Because that's what we would do to each other all the time. And this started when we went to Paris to promote Quantum Leap, and we were walking down the street, and we were so tired because we didn't sleep, you know, really on the plane. We stayed up talking, flying over there, and our rooms weren't ready, so we're walking around Paris, and we're walking on the street, and there was a street sign or a store sign, I don't remember, and I don't remember the song, but it was like a Temptation song, and I started humming it. Because I work with so many singers, you know, I know the words. I just ironically, to almost any song, you know, the 60s, 70s, you know, that type of music. And it started there. So now that's what we do to each other. We'll pick up the phone, call each other, hum a song, and hang up. And just so that the song is in each other's head. So when he said that to me, and this wasn't my intention that day, is purely, I really did have that memory. I went around to the entire crew and cast of the show. And by the end of the day, and told them, whistle, hum, sing, you got this song all day long. By the end of the day, his entire crew and cast of Enterprise were singing, humming, whistling, Volare. He heard it the entire day. He couldn't get it out of his head. That's what we do to each other.
He's a good singer. He did a lot of performing on the Quantum Leap, and also he's very musically talented. And I'm very happy to see that in New Orleans he's playing the piano.
Well, his episode of Boston Legal, mm-hmm. he sang at the piano with Candace Bergen also.
Just an amazing talent he has.
Well, I'm looking at these pictures. So the Driving Miss Daisy episode, the Brooklyn Mafia episode, Gloria was a fun episode. The trapeze episode, he didn't like so much because he has motion sickness and he had to hang upside down from a trapeze.
Well, that's understandable.
The Don Quixote episode was wonderful.
A lot of people love that one. That got Man of La Mancha stuck in my head for quite some time.
Yep. The Leap Home, where he played his dad and he played himself at the same time. That's one of the most touching episodes ever. That really got to me.
It made me cry as a teenager, and it makes me cry as an adult. It's an amazing episode. One of my favorites.
The Jimmy episode, Shock Theater, I think, was just incredible. I loved Shock Theater. Lee Harvey Oswald episode, that was good, and there was a wonderful twist at the end.
Yes.
Those, I think, were my favorite episodes.
Those are some of my favorites, too.
I'm looking at the pictures on the back of these boxes while I'm talking to you. That's what's coming to me.
Every episode, there was something real that you could get into it. And also, there was a lot of, let's say, moral lessons. We weren't necessarily hit over the head with them, but we usually learned something from them.
Yeah.
Did Scott ever have any input on maybe what was going to be part of the show, like any issue, or was that the writers and he went along with it and like had veto
really
power?
More Don. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they had conversations about things, you know, about what the episode was going to be. But that was really more Don Bellisario. It was his show, it was his decision, you know, on what it was. But yeah, Scott came up with things. You know, if the show had gone on, he wanted to do a hockey episode because we're both into hockey and we played hockey and stuff. But, you know, that was going to be for the next season.
Mm.
But yeah, he did. They had conversations, but ultimately it was all about Don.
Was there anything that he didn't want to do or was uncomfortable that came across?
No, I think Scott was pretty much up for the challenge of everything they gave him. You know, in the whole 5-year run, he had like maybe 4.5 days off.
I know he worked like crazy, right?
Yeah, he was in almost every episode.
And I know that was like an issue with Enterprise, that the schedule was even more demanding on Enterprise.
No, it was not. It was because in Quantum Leap, it was just him and Dean, and mostly him. I mean, more than Dean. On Enterprise, you had 4 other people.
Hmm. So that helps.
Yeah.
How's he doing with NCIS New Orleans, the schedule? I heard it just got picked up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it did. And he's okay with it.
Good.
He's actually home. I'm waiting for him to call me today. It's getting a little bit easier now. In the beginning, it was a little rougher because he was coming back here every week to L.A. to do publicity and do all kinds of things that he had to do for the show. But now things are settling in, and it's gotten a bit better.
Do they film mostly in New Orleans, or is it like...
All in New Orleans.
All of it. Okay. Wow. How did that whole deal come about with NCIS?
But they had wanted him to do the show, you know, like a guest spot. Like 2 years ago, and he wasn't up for that or wasn't available for it. But they came to him with this, and he read the script, and he liked it, and it was started out as a 2-part episode of the Mothership, as they call it, and they spun it off. Actually, the producer I was talking to you about, Charles Johnson,
mm-hmm.
he's the one who suggested, well, what about Scott Bakula for this? And they thought, oh, do you think we can get Scott for this? And I said, well, let's try. And so that's really how it happened. But I also have a client on that show. I have Rocky Carroll, who plays Director Vance. So I get to see and speak to Charles all the time.
Is it difficult for you to get into the shows when you know so many people that are working on the shows? Can you separate the two when you're watching it at home?
Oh, yeah. When I watch, I'm a TV junkie. I watch almost everything on television, and I have very eclectic tastes. But when I watch TV, I don't watch it as being a part of this industry at all. I'm strictly a viewer.
It's awesome that you can do that. A lot of people can't do that.
Yeah, I'm strictly a viewer when I watch the shows. There's certain shows I can't be doing anything else. Other shows I can, you know, be working at the computer and have it on, and it's all good. But there are certain shows I can't, I just have to stop and just watch.
I get absorbed into them like a good book.
Yeah, so do I.
Can you share with us some stories from behind the scenes of Quantum Leap, things that might have happened or interesting memories that you have?
Well, we used to go to a sound stage next door, you know, the empty sound stages, and play roller hockey, you know, on lunch breaks, which we weren't allowed to do. I'd get a phone call and say, come on over, we're going to play. And Michael Watkins, who was the director of photography, who's now, he's one of the executive producers on Blacklist. He's the one who taught me how to play roller hockey. So we used to do that. I don't know, what else did we do? I don't know, I have to think about that, actually. But I know that's a fun behind-the-scenes thing that we used to do that not many people know about.
Were you not allowed to do it because of insurance reasons? They didn't want
insurance, to... Insurance, yeah, and, you know, if Scott got hurt or anything, you know, we weren't allowed. You know, but we'd sneak over.
you got to have some fun.
Yeah.
So you said you went on the set a lot of Quantum Leap.
Yeah, I was on every episode.
Like, so when Scott Bakula's doing different press things, you're with him most of the time?
Yeah, Scott does no press at all. I'm with Scott for every press appearance or any award shows or any parties and stuff. I'm always with Scott.
That's good.
I'm in the car with him going. The car picks me up first, then we go get him, and then we go do our thing.
Is that just a better way to handle things? To have that extra layer of protection so people can't maybe get an interview with him and misquote him?
It's not about that, because Scott won't do interviews if I'm not there.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I mean, unless, you know, we talk about it to begin with, we know what it's going to be and so on, or phoners, I'm certainly not there when he does phone interviews, but, you know, when we go for all the major stuff, it's just a matter of taking care of, and, you know, that personal extra step. And I do that for all my clients. But with Scott's the one, you know, I kind of started it with. I've been, as I said, doing it with him since 86. And it's sort of like what we do. It's just like we wouldn't ever think of not doing it that way because it's, you know, you get up and you brush your teeth in the morning. That's how it's just like a thing that we do.
You said it was very easy to do this for Scott. Have you ever had any clients, and I know you can't mention any names, but have you ever had to do like damage control, and is that another facet of your job?
Yes, yes. I had to do that with quite a few people, and those things aren't fun, you know? It's not as much fun, you know? But I've also had to do, you know, when Michael Jackson died and Farrah Fawcett died on the same day. And I represent Jacqueline Smith and Cheryl Ladd. So I started getting calls about Farrah Fawcett. And then, you know, for them, would Jacqueline say anything or would Cheryl say anything? And then dealing with that, my phone going, you know, ringing off the hook. And then that afternoon, Michael Jackson died. And Gladys Knight discovered the Jackson 5. You know, I went to, I'll tell you, sort of a bizarre story when we went, I went with Gladys to Michael Jackson's funeral at the Staples Center, and we were trying to, they were telling us where to go, so I had the car pulled to the side of the road in front of the Staples Center, but they closed all the freeways and the streets when the hearse was coming with the family in back of them, and whoever I was talking to on the phone, you know, was telling me where to go, so I got out of the limo. And I'm standing in the middle of the street, you know, trying to find the person that I was talking to or where to go. And I'm standing there, and I turn around, and the hearse pulls up right next to me, right beside me.
Mm.
And I turn my head, and there's Michael Jackson's casket right there, the gold casket right there next to me. And the police all around, and I'm surprised none of the police came over to me like, what are you doing in the street? You know, you get out of here, and, you know, for protection. Nobody said a word, and then, you know, the hearse continued to drive. But, I mean, it was standing there for like a good 5 minutes. We were standing next to each other. You know, me and the hearse were next to each other. That was just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've been to stuff like that, you know, and that's weird. And then, I went inside, and I was in the funeral. I was at the big funeral for Michael Jackson, which, again, is kind of surreal to be a part of, you know? But I'm a part of stuff like that. I mean, it sort of comes with the territory of what it is.
That was a sad few days there.
Yeah. But here I was. I got calls for both about Farrah Fawcett in the morning and Michael Jackson in the afternoon.
That's almost hard to absorb it like everyone else was at home absorbing what was going on when you actually had to work and be part of that.
Yeah, and be a part of it.
Mm.
You know, but you don't really get the gravity of it because you're working. So you're on adrenaline and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm.
But still, you're at a funeral. Death is always a very tough thing to deal with, no matter who it is. And personal is very different than public. Public is sort of a thing. It's like, oh, wow, I can't believe that.
Yeah. Sure, it was personal for a lot of people at the funeral.
Yeah, it was.
It's just good that they have somebody to go with them, like Gladys or Scott, when they go places, because you don't want to be alone, especially when you might have crazy fans out there. Have you ever had to deal with crazy fans or stalkers for any of the people you represent?
Yeah, we had one. Yes, we did for a client of mine. And it's, you know, you don't, that's also another thing. It's like, you don't understand, like, well, I don't get that. What do you have to do with me? But you have to then change the way you do things, you know?
Is that scary?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I try to just continue to live my life without letting any of that take over, you know, but also being smart and, you know, having the right people and security around you to handle that.
What are, like, some of the other things that you've got to do doing your job that you wouldn't have normally done?
I traveled all over the place. I've been to Paris a few times. So I was with Scott. I was there with Jean-Claude Van Damme. I was there with Danny Aiello. I was in Rome with Danny Aiello, which is incredible. Because if you're going to go to Rome or Italy, that's the place to go. It's Danny Aiello.
I bet he knew all the good places to eat.
Yes, he did. I was in Wales with Gladys. I've been in Germany and Australia with Scott. I don't think I ever would have got to Australia if not for Scott. I've been to London a few times as well. I mean, it's you know, when I travel with Scott, it's work, but it's also fun because he's my friend. So after the work is done, then we go and do our thing. Like, we'll go to dinner, or we'll go for a walk, or we'll go. I tell you a funny story. We were in London, and we had to... It was right before The Informant had come out, and L'Uomo Vogue, which is Italian Vogue, called and they wanted to do a piece with Scott. And I said, well, ironically, we're going to be in London. And they said, okay, we'll set up this photo shoot. So Scott was there earlier than I was because he was on vacation and his wife has family over there. And so I flew in. And then once I got there, then they were sending a car for me, and we were going to the photographers for the shoot, and Scott was going to meet me there. And I had just, the plane was late, and I had just gotten off the plane, threw my bags in my room, came downstairs, got in the car, went over there, and they said, you know, I had a call sheet with everybody, and the photographer's name was Brian Adams. It's okay, so we go, and actually Scott got there when I got there. So, you know, we got there about the same time, and we go in, and he's, you know, doing wardrobe, and I'm in the kitchen and with Brian, and I'm saying, you know, I'm starving because the plane was late, and blah, 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 and he's making me hummus and crackers and stuff, and we're standing in the kitchen talking, and he's got a beautiful flat, and he was explaining that he bought, you know, it was a small one, but he bought the one next to it, and then the one next to it, and the one next to it, and he broke down walls, and he made this huge, huge flat where he lived, and it was his photo studio. And he was asking me who else I represented, and I mentioned Gladys Knight, and he said, oh, I would love to shoot Gladys Knight. I'm like, oh, great. And he said, you know, I'd love to do a song for Gladys Knight. And I'm like, okay, great. Now, mind you, I had just gotten off a plane. I was tired. I was hungry. It was, you know, jet lag. And I walked out of there, and I went into the wardrobe room to talk to Scott. And I said to him, you know, I think that's Bryan Adams. And he said, yeah, I know. I met him. I said, no. I think that's the singer, Bryan Adams. You know, the song, Everything I Do It For You. He goes, no, you really think so? I'm like, yeah, I really think so, because things he was saying to me. He said, okay. And now we go to the other part of the flat, which is the hair and makeup room, and the makeup girl is there. And so Scott's sitting in the chair in front of me. You know, they're side by side, but it swivels. So I'm facing him and the makeup girl with my back to the door. And I said to the makeup girl, excuse me, do you know, is that Bryan Adams, the singer? And I start to sing the song again. Everything I do it for you. And Scott and the makeup girl now are just, they're looking past me, like behind me. And I look at them and I'm like, he's standing right in back of me, isn't he? And I go, yep. And sure enough, it was him. It's Bryan. Bryan, he's also a photographer.
Wow.
Who would have thunk it? I didn't know he was a star. He's like this, you know, summer of 69. He's a big, big, big singer.
Wow.
And that's who it is. But I was embarrassed because I'm singing his song, talking about him, and he's standing right in back of me, and I don't know that.
That's funny.
But we had a fun, that was a fun day, we hanging out with him. And then he and I have become friends, email friends. So.
Oh, good.
He's a really nice guy. But stuff like that happens, like, you know, I tell people when they ask me about this, the business and me doing it, you know, I'm just a simple kid from Brooklyn. That's who I am. So now whenever I do things or things like this happen, you know, I'm like, you know, not bad for a kid from Brooklyn.
Not bad at all.
That's sort of my catchphrase. Not bad for a kid.
Your job, is it different, like, on a day-to-day basis? It sounds like you have no idea what's coming. You just roll it.
Yeah, it changes moment to moment. It's fun. I love what I do. I couldn't do anything else. When people ask me about getting in this business, first thing I ask them is if they have a plan B. Because if you have a plan B and you want to be in the entertainment business, then you should go do your plan B. Entertainment business, it's a very large industry, a very small community. Mm. And the entertainment business is very, very hard, full of disappointments. Full of disappointments. But if there isn't anything else that you could possibly do, then this is it. And that's what it is for me. There's nothing else that I could do but this. So my days are sometimes very challenging. You know, you're trying to make deals with people and convince people. Brandon Tartikoff ran NBC when Quantum Leap was on. He was a very big executive. He was there for Cheers and Family Ties and The Cosby Show. And, you know, he was the guy. And he said, in this business, you're either a beggar or a chooser. Who are you going to be? So if you're a beggar, you're an actor begging for a job. You're an agent begging a casting director to get your client in for a job. If you're a producer or a studio or a network, you're a chooser. You say, okay, I choose you. You can be on my show. So that's what our business is broken down to, beggars and choosers. So for me, I'm both a beggar and a chooser. I'm a beggar when I want, say, Vanity Fair to do a piece on my client. I'm a chooser when, you know, a talk show will call and say, we want a client to be on the show. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not right for us right now, but thank you so much for thinking of us. So it's much more fun being a chooser than a beggar. But being a beggar gives you much more of an appreciation for the work that goes into what you have to do and much more of an accomplishment. So I think, I take that back. I think it's more exciting to be a beggar because of what you can possibly get out of that, because you have to put in the time, the effort, and the energy to make it happen. And that's what I love about what I do. And there isn't anything else that I could or would want to do than what I do and work in the entertainment business. I love what I do, and I love the people that I work with. And I'm lucky that I get to work with the people that I do. You know, when I was a kid in college, Charlie's Angels was this huge, huge deal when it was on, you know? I've represented 4 of the 6 Charlie's Angels, and I represent 2 of them.
That's pretty cool. Do you have a maximum amount of people you can represent just because of your time limits? So is it hard to take on a new client?
No, not if you can always make the time. I mean, it gets more strenuous on you, you know, but you can always make the time if there's somebody that you really want to work with. You make it work.
You mentioned you were friends with Scott Bakula besides working with him. In either capacity, did you ever help him like make decisions on what roles to take and what roles not to take?
Now, he ultimately decides, but we do talk about everything that happens in his career.
Right.
We talk about every single, he'll tell me, oh, this was offered, or this was offered, this is what this is about. This. So we will talk it out, but he makes the decisions on his own.
Right. You're kind of like a sounding board, though, maybe?
Yeah. I also think because we're such good friends and we've known each other and worked with each other for so many years, we talk about everything.
Do you sometimes find out things about him, let's say, before, or any of your clients, before they do? Say, do people reach you for comments of, like, this show being canceled and you didn't know yet?
Well, never that, but, yeah, you know, I'll hear things before he does, and I'll call him. You know, it's fun when he was nominated for an Emmy last year for the Liberace movie, Behind the Candelabra. I got a, you know, I found out and I called him, and we didn't think he was going to be nominated. So I was getting calls, you know, a couple of days in advance. Are you guys going to be around? Will he be available for comment? I'm like, yeah, but he's not going to get nominated. And I woke up that morning and I had tons of emails from HBO and all the different news outlets. And so I called him and I said, you got nominated. And he was like, yeah, well, I expected it to be nominated. And I said, he was talking about the movie. And I said, no, no, the movie got nominated, but I'm not talking about the nominee. I'm saying you got nominated. He goes, are you kidding me? So, yeah, you know, that's fun. That's always fun when that stuff happens. He and I have been through, you know, a lot, you know, and a lot of that stuff. And it's fun. It's just, you know, those are the good times. Those are the fun times. Because a lot of times they're not so much fun, you know, and they're not so good. You know, but it just comes with the territory.
He's up for a People's Choice Awards right now?
Yes, he is.
I voted for him.
Thank you.
I might be a little biased.
You can vote more than once, you know.
Every day, something like that?
Yeah.
Hopefully he gets that Best New Drama, too, I think.
Yeah, the show is up for Best New Drama as well, yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. The entertainment business, it's how much of it is actual work of doing the performance and making that happen, and how much is the rest of the business, like doing press and interviews and everything that comes with it?
I think it's all about it all feeds into it. It all works hand in hand together. However, it's all about the work. If the work is not there, then there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to do press about if the work isn't there. So it's got to start with the work. And then you go from there. Then you do the press. Then you do, that's why, you know, come Emmy time and you, there's all these parties and functions and events to go to for the Television Academy. You have to go along with it all and participate in it. And it's, you know, some of it is a lot of fun. Some of it isn't. But some of it is a lot of fun, and you go and you do and you have a good time, you know, and hope. But the bottom line, you hope that people think the work that the actor does is good and deserving of recognition.
You go to a lot of interviews with him and maybe press junkets.
Yeah.
Is there questions that you hear over and over and over again that, like me as an interviewer, I don't want to ask the same questions over and over again that everybody else asks? What kind of questions do you think, one, that maybe Scott's answered way too many times and ones that he hasn't had before and that might be good to ask?
I don't know, really. I know that, one, we did an appearance in Germany, and we were at this Q&A, and this young guy got up, and he was a fan of Quantum, And he was saying that his mother taught him how to be a better person by watching Quantum Leap, because he said that the expression around his house was, you know, when he was making questionable choices, his mother would say, WWSBD, what would Sam Beckett do? And Scott and I had never heard that before. And I thought that was very poignant, because I never thought of Sam Beckett in that way or Quantum Leap in that way. To me, Quantum Leap was just, you know, it was just a feel-good, wonderful experience. But other people are seeing it as a role model, as him as a role model. Well, what would Sam Beckett do in this situation? Would he go down this road or would he go down that road? And so I thought that was pretty cool in the scheme of things. You know, as far as questions that he's, I don't know. I don't know. I've heard them all, you know. I've heard them all, and I don't know, and Scott doesn't mind them. You know, Quantum Leap was certainly a very, very, very special time in his life and in my life. You know, it was a great show. I wish they would have done a movie of it.
Yeah, but it's great that we have what we do.
Yes, absolutely. And Dean just did, you know, New Orleans. I watched that episode the other night.
That was exciting for us as fans of Quantum Leap to see Dean Stockwell and Scott Bakula back together again. How did that work out? How did you find out about that?
Somebody called me and told me that Dean was doing the show. Mm. I don't even think Scott told me. I think somebody else told me.
That seemed like it was fun for the guys. I read that article from TV Guide about how they had lunch afterwards.
Yeah, Dean and Jimmy Whitmore and Scott. Jimmy Whitmore has been directing a lot of episodes of NCIS and NCIS New Orleans now. And Jimmy, you know, did a lot of Quantums. You know, I remember when Jimmy also directed the first episode that Scott did of NCIS, you know, the two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on set, you know, I saw Jimmy for the first time in years. So it was nice.
And he directed episodes of Quantum Leap, some really good ones too, right?
15 episodes of Quantum.
Yeah, like Lee Harvey Oswald, the finale, right?
And yeah.
Different things. Yeah. Jimmy, some of our favorites. Yeah, that whole what would Sam Beckett do is we say that around our house sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, and when you do the initials WWSBD, it's like could be Scott Bakula or Sam Beckett.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, I think, confuse his character with the actor himself because they're both such good people.
Yeah.
How is the person and the character that you've seen on TV different?
Different. I don't know. He's a good guy, like I said before. You know, Scott's the friend that you want to have. Scott, you know, he told me many, many years ago, he said, well, we were talking about friendship. We were talking about our friendship. And he said, you know, my dad, meaning his dad, had said, if I had the last $100 in my pocket and you needed it, I would give that to you. And that's what a friend is. And that's who Scott is to me. And that's who Scott is in general, but that's who he is as a friend, and I'm the exact same way with him. You know, we're really, really one of my best friends, one of my closest friends in my life. You know, it's funny, when we get together and working with CBS with him, the publicity people, it's hard to explain Scott and my relationship. Literally, when we're together, we smack each other, we trip each other. We push each other into the wall. We're like brothers, literally smacking in the back of the head type of. That's just what we do. And when we're together with the fans, someone said, oh, it's the Scott and Jay show. We put on our little show, our little sarcasms with each other and talking back and talking about each other in front of everybody. But that's truly who we are. So, you know, they call it a show. It's not really a show. That's just who we are and how we talk to each other and what we do with each other. But that's because we're such good friends. But the women at CBS, when we had to do our press junket for the launch of the show, they watched us and they just couldn't believe it. They said, you know, we just need to get a camera on the two of you because that's a sitcom, just the two of you. So it's fun, you know, and it's all real. There's nothing's made up. It's all real. And he's really that good of a guy. So how does he compare with Sam Beckett? Well, Sam Beckett was a good guy, you know, always looking to help other people. Scott's that way too. Scott always looks out for everybody. You know, sometimes to a fault, where he has to look out for himself first, you know? Mm. He's just a wonderful, wonderful human being.
I think that comes across to the fans, and I think that's one of the reasons he is so loved by fans, is that you can just tell he's a genuinely nice person.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, I count myself very, very lucky to have him in my life.
You guys did a panel together at the Quantum Leap convention a few years back?
Yeah, we did a trivia contest is what we did, that who knew more about quantum.
So who won?
Well, it was rigged, so he won. But I came up there with my little, someone had made me a little Lego Ziggy.
Oh.
So I came up there with Ziggy. I think it's in some of the pictures I sent you,
mm-hmm.
holding it in my hand. It was funny because Don Belisario, he was doing the next panel with Scott. It was the end of the day, you know, it was the end of the convention. Scott and I went up there, and the place was packed. Like, everybody came into this room for this. And then Don came in, so I'd yell out in the back, Don, what's the answer? What's the answer? But, I mean, Don loved it, and Don obviously knows how close we are because we were all that way from the beginning. But, yeah, we did a trivia contest. Because Scott and I will always talk about, you know, remember this or remember that. Oh, that actress, remember she was in that episode. So that's what that panel was about.
How did that Quantum Leap convention come about? Like, how did they invite Scott and did he...
Well, the fans put it together. We have very, very, very loyal fans. And they contacted me and said they were going to do it. And we said we would participate. And they all put it together. They did it. And the fans are in touch. You know, the fans that have been fans from the very beginning, they are always in constant touch. Scott has the best fans. Whenever he's done appearances or wherever he goes, if he's performing for in his kid's high school, you know, for a charity, the fans show up from England, from Switzerland, from Australia. They come. So we've known these people. And so what we do when they show up for us, we'll do a private Q&A, a little private, you know, chat with each of them. Not each of them, but like a room. Mm-hmm. We'll get a room and we'll sit down and we'll do it with them.
Do you go with him at all ever on Star Trek conventions? Does he do many of those?
Yeah. Yep. He doesn't do many. He's done a few. And yes, I've been with him. That's where we went to Australia. We went for a convention. In Germany, we went for a convention. In England, we went for a convention. The last one he did was in August. We did one in Vegas for Star Trek. But I don't foresee him doing any conventions now for quite some time.
Yeah, he's probably pretty busy with NCIS.
Yeah.
Being involved in Quantum Leap is amazing. And then being involved in Star Trek, again, is amazing. And having those two things in your career, I'm sure it makes him such love by so many different fans.
Yeah, he's got quite a large fan base. The two shows are a little different. Quantum Leap is his, what he originated. So those fans, they're called Leapers.
Mm-hmm.
Those fans are, you know, feel like they're the beginning. They're the fans. You know, it's them. And Star Trek, and I don't know that we, you know, would disagree with that. Star Trek, you know, sort of we came into, you know, that wasn't really our, it wasn't his thing, you know. That was like William Shatner's thing, mm-hmm. you know. So a little different. But equally, equally, it's the Star Trek world is bigger than the Quantum Leap world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a thing to have them both.
Were you an avid viewer of Enterprise? Were you into that when that was on?
You know, I watched every episode.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't say that I was a fan like I was of Quantum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something special about Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
It's hard to put your finger on it, but it just, everything worked out, it seemed, to make it special.
Yes, absolutely. But I watched Enterprise, and I enjoyed Enterprise, and I was certainly on the set of Enterprise, and, you know, it's just different, you know? It was a very different show in tone also.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum Leap always had a moral, a story, a something that touched your heart or pulled at your heart that made you feel good. That's what was so special about that show. That's why people, you know, to this day sit down with their families to watch that show.
I think we can learn a lot from Quantum Leap.
I do, too. I love the kiss with history that they would do. I would call Don all the time asking him, about the Kiss with History. I love that. You know what that is? That would be the Kiss with History was like, I think in the episode, the blackout, where they have the blackout episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the lights come on and there are two little boys in the bathroom, like mm-hmm. one of the last scenes,
mm-hmm.
and the little boy starts to do a dance and the other kid says, "That was great, Michael."
Yeah.
That's a Kiss with History.
Those are always funny.
When he did the episode with the pig, I can't think of the name of the episode now, where he's holding the pig
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting with a kid who's writing a song and he's singing Piggy Sue, Piggy Sue. And then he changes it to Peggy Sue.
Hmm.
That was Buddy Holly. That's a Kiss with History.
Yeah, those are always fun. Who else? Stephen King, Woody Allen, yeah. Different people they put in there.
Right.
That was always
so
fun.
So those were all the Kiss with, you know, that's what would be called the Kiss with History.
Those are always fun.
Yeah. Everything about Quantum was fun. Everything about that show was fun. You know, learning how to rollerblade, learning how to ice, to play ice hockey. That was all during the Quantum Leap time with all those people.
Being a fan of the show and being so close to the show, is there anything that you enjoyed more because you were so close to the show?
I don't know. I loved watching it after, you know I was there for that, you know, like I was standing right there when that happened, you know, like the Valare scene. I think just watching it and then, you know, picking up the phone and having a conversation with him about it afterward.
Do you think Scott will do any singing in his new show?
It's quite possible. I don't know that anything's been discussed yet,
mm-hmm.
but he's already played the piano.
Right. That was awesome.
But I don't know. Honestly, I don't have a clue. I don't know what the writers have planned.
I really didn't think they would be able to figure out a way to have him playing the piano work into that, but it worked out so perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, being in New Orleans, you can't.
Right.
Perfect.
And he really plays the piano.
Oh, of course. Yes, he's amazing. He's a quadruple threat?
Yeah, he is.
He can do anything. Your other clients, I know you have stuff coming up, right? Gladys Knight just had a movie on?
Yeah, on Lifetime. And I think we're going to be in Nashville in January, like 15th, 13, 14, 15, something like that. She's doing something with Martina McBride. I think it's going to be a live streaming show. There might be some news with Cheryl Ladd and Jacqueline Smith in the new year. Rocky Carroll's directing an episode starting on Monday of NCIS. Anita Baker going to release a new album sometime in the spring, I think. I have some people going back to Dancing with the Stars in March.
Louis Van Amstel, right?
I think Louis, yeah.
That's exciting.
I don't done deal yet, but I think that might happen, and there might be some other people as well. Yeah, I think that's what's going on for the moment.
That's a lot of stuff going on. Have you been down to the set on New Orleans yet?
Yeah, I've been there twice.
What's the set like there versus the other sets he's been on, Enterprise and Quantum Leap? And
it's a good set. It's a nice people. You know, I don't know them all very well because, you know, they're there and I'm here. But being there, the first time I was there, I was sick. I had gotten sick that weekend. It turns out I was sick for 3 months. I turned into walking pneumonia because I was traveling so much. So the first trip I was there in August, I was pretty sick. So after, you know, I'd go back to the hotel and that was it. The second time I was there, it was for the premiere of the show. And I got to see everybody. I was like, oh, it's so good to see you and you're not sick this time. So it was a bit more fun the second time than the first. But the people are very, very nice. You know, how can they help? And they're just very, very nice people. The people of New Orleans are wonderful. It's great. But every set is different. But I think it also is a tone from the, you know, the top all the way down. And everybody's great on that set.
Is that like a 6-year, 7-year deal?
Right now, it's this 1 year.
Oh, wow.
You know, they hope it'll get picked up for the next season mm-hmm. and the season after that. But, you know, the television business today has changed. You know, there are shows that have been picked up that have been canceled, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. What's your feeling on it? You think it'll last a while?
I think the show will be around for a while, but that's just my personal feeling. You know, I don't run a network. I'm not the one.
It's the first NCIS I watched personally just because Scott Bakula's on it, and I'm really getting into it. I really enjoy it.
Cool. think the relationship between him and CCH Pounder is just wonderful. When they're on the screen together, I think it's electric.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's very special. But the whole cast, that the kid Rob Kirkovich is hysterical. I love him. He's just brilliant, in my opinion. But like I said, I think they're all good, and I think the entire crew and everybody there, I think, is just, they're wonderful, they're nice, they're just what you want a set to be.
What's the schedule like for that? How many months out of the year they got to shoot?
They started in July, and I think they'll finish in maybe April.
So quite a long time.
Yeah.
Keeps him busy, keeps you busy, I'm sure.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know if NCIS has done international stuff yet, but does he have to go back and do more international press for that?
Well, we just did, like 2 weeks ago, we did an international press junket here. They brought all the journalists in from around the world, and we did a press junket here in Beverly Hills about 2 weeks ago. And as far as going anywhere, you know, I'm sure they would like us to, but so far they've not approached us. And right now, he couldn't do anything anyway. He's got to concentrate on making the show. And then he's very much a family man. So, you know, he's away from his family. You know, one kid just went to college. Another kid just started a new high school. You know, he's there. They're here. So he's very much, I think, going to just want to be about being home.
Well, that makes sense.
Family comes first.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Going back to Quantum Leap, if there was ever a reboot or a reimagining of Quantum Leap, do you think Scott Bakula would be up for a cameo in it or something?
Quite possibly. He's always wanted to do the movie of Quantum.
It doesn't look like that's going to happen now, I guess.
Correct.
People are getting older, and of course, he's busy.
Yeah, but he's always wanted to do something with Quantum, and I don't know that Quantum would be the same with anybody else, honestly. Maybe I'm just saying that because I only want it to be Scott.
I think Scott Bakula is so intertwined with Quantum Leap that it would be really hard to make that magic happen again.
Yeah, I think so too.
What are some of your fondest memories of Quantum Leap?
Like I said before, the show. The show is a very special show. It was a feel-good show. So everything about that show, about shooting it and watching it and being proud to have been a part of it, is just wonderful. It's. I don't think there was ever another show like it. You know, and I'm not talking about the time travel part of it. I'm talking just about, you know, how good it was. And that's very special. There aren't very many shows that are like that. And so I think, for me, everything about it made me feel good. Everything about it, about that show, made me feel good because it was just a special, special show. And to say that I was a part of it, wow, you know, that's very cool.